This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Grandfather's house we go. The horse knows the way to carry the sled through the white and drifted snow. Over the river and through the woods, oh, how the wind does blow. Stings the toes and bites the nose, and over the ground we go.
Well, hello. That is a very familiar seasonal song whose words were written by an early abolitionist and feminist who was highly critical of religion, Lydia Maria Child. And I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. Welcome to Free Thought Radio.
So happy upcoming Thanksgiving.
And remember this Thanksgiving, give thanks where it is truly due to the cook.
To the cook, that's right. I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airway. This is the November 17th, 2012 broadcast of Free Thought Radio. The show is broadcast from Madison, Wisconsin. We broadcast also in Columbia, Missouri, in Grand Rapids, Michigan, in Ithaca, New York, Monterey, California.
And Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of FFRF, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and we work to uphold the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment of the Constitution to keep religion out of government, and we work to educate the public about non-theists, and our members are personally free from religion.
So now that you've set it up, I can just say FFRF from now on. We know what that stands for. We'll have two short interviews today on the second half of the show with a Kentucky FFRF member and activist, Suzanne Lamb, who's going to tell us what's going on with the Gideons in public schools in her neck of the woods, and then a short recap from FFRF staff attorney Rebecca Markert about all her recent victories ending illegal prayer at public school boards.
Now, Dan, you are just back from a trip to Oxford, and you did a debate on the existence of God, so I'm very eager to find out, does God exist?
Well, according to the vote, and the Oxford Union is very parliamentary over there in Britain, and in fact, Parliament was based on a lot of the protocols and customs of the Oxford Union. They vote with their feet. So the motion of the night was, this house believes in God. And at the end of the debate, after I and Michael Shermer and Peter Milliken debated John Lennox, Peter Hitchens, and Julia Collicott, about 142, I forget the exact number, 140-something, marched out the door for the proposition, meaning they said, yes, this house believes in God. But going out the door for the opposition, for our side, more than 160. So we won the debate.
Literally vote with their feet, and there is no God.
Well, the proposition was, this house believes there's a God. So there's no belief in God, technically, at the Oxford Union. And it was really an exciting time. I've done more than 100 debates, but to be able to stand at this prestigious location where Einstein stood and Hawking and... the Dalai Lama and Carter was there, and actresses and actors and scientists and politicians and all sorts of famous people. I got to stand. In fact, Richard Dawkins was in the audience, which was really an honor to have him there.
You need to make sure you did a good debate if he's there.
Yeah, I know. It was a little bit on the spot there. But
now, this is the tradition where the debaters have to wear a tux.
Yes, I had to wear a tuxedo. I had my jazz tuxedo, so I didn't have to buy one.
You're probably one of the few people there who speaks there, at least from overseas, who actually owns a tuxedo.
Yeah, and I was the only person in the room that had piano keyboard suspenders, too. But it was really fun. It was very proper. And the other side, only one of the three on the other side really offered any arguments or evidences. That was Lennox. He's a very, very polite mathematician. Peter Hitchens was really bad. It was all ad hominem and angry, and the woman who was an Anglican priest, she didn't really say that much. I didn't even write much down. But
she wrote a book called The Dawkins Delusion, so you can see where she was coming from.
Exactly.
Now, people can read your entire blog about this at fffrf.org/news/blog. So
it's called This House Does Not Believe in God.
And eventually, we think there'll be at least a link to
the video of it,
but you don't have that yet.
No.
Now, you may be aware that everybody's talking about the unlawful political activity of churches in this past election season, but nobody's doing anything about it, particularly the IRS.
Like complaining about the weather.
So we at the Freedom From Religion Foundation are doing something about it. We have taken action. We are taking the IRS to court, demanding that it enforce electioneering restrictions against churches and religious organizations.
There's nothing you like more, Annie Laurie, than taking a new lawsuit, especially one in federal court.
And we just filed this on Wednesday.
Just on Wednesday, this last week. FFRF, with our attorney Richard L. Bolton, filed our federal lawsuit last week here in Madison, Wisconsin, in U.S. District Court for the Western District. And we name as defendant Commissioner Douglas Shulman, who is the IRS commissioner.
So you may be aware that groups that are tax-exempt, such as churches, are prohibited from intervening in political campaigns as a condition of getting tax exemption under Section 501c3 of the tax code. And why would that be? Because if tax-exempt groups engage in politicking and partisan electioneering, it's an unfair battle. That political speech would be subsidized by the rest of us who don't get an exemption for our political speech. And donors to these churches are able to get a tax write-off for contributions that could be used to subsidize candidates or political action. And that is very, very wrong.
The IRS is supposed to factor in a variety of points in their determination of whether advocacy by a tax-exempt group constitutes impermissible campaign intervention. And some of these factors include whether the communication identifies one or more candidates for a public office, whether it expresses approval or disapproval of one or more candidates' positions or actions, whether the communication is delivered close to an election, whether it makes reference to voting or the election, whether the issue addressed in the communication has been raised as an issue distinguishing candidates for a given office.
A very widely circulated Bloomberg News article quoted the IRS's tax-exempt and government entities division employee, Russell Wenrink, saying in October that the IRS has suspended tax audits of churches, and many other sources have claimed the IRS hasn't been auditing churches since at least 2009. Now, an IRS spokesman denied Wenrink's statements as a misspeak, but there is no evidence that the IRS is making inquiries or actions in the past 3 years. And FFRF has been sending out a lot of letters of complaint. And as many as 1,500 clergy reportedly violated the electioneering restrictions on Sunday, October 7th. And this was sort of a mass national action. And our legal complaint in the lawsuit also references blatantly political full-page ads running in the 3 Sundays leading up to the presidential elections by the Billy Graham Evangelical Association. And we wrote letters to the IRS about that with no expectation they would do anything, and that is why we are suing them.
So get this, these churches that preach morality are the ones who are first in line to break the law. FFRF is asking the federal court to enjoin IRS Commissioner Douglas Shulman from continuing a policy of non-enforcement of the electioneering restrictions against churches and religious organizations. Additionally, FFRF seeks to order Shulman to authorize a high-ranking official within the IRS to approve and to initiate enforcement of the restrictions against the churches and religious organizations, including the electioneering restrictions, as the law requires. This non-enforcement constitutes a preferential treatment to churches and religious organizations that's not provided to other tax-exempt groups, including FFRF. Churches and religious organizations obtain a significant benefit as a result of being exempt from income taxation while also being able to preferentially engage in electioneering, which is something secular tax-exempt groups cannot do. This preferential tax exemption involves more than $100 billion annually in tax-free contributions to churches and religious organizations in the U.S.
So in addition to reporting the Graham Ministries electioneering to the IRS, FFRF has already this year sent 27 official letters of complaint to the IRS, and we expect to do more. And among these complaints, Green Bay Bishop David L. Ricken wrote an article on diocesan letterhead inserted at his order in all parish bulletins about voting and how to vote and choose the president and other offices. And Ricken warned that if Catholics vote for a party or candidate who supports abortion rights or marriage equality, and you would be very clear on who those were, you could be morally complicit with these choices, which are intrinsically evil. He said, this could put your own soul in jeopardy. Ooh. So that's the kind of violation that we're seeing.
And there's many others we can read about. We think this is a very important lawsuit that FFRF is taking the lead on. And if you agree, we hope you'll contribute to our legal fund to help support the litigation. Or if you're not a member of FFRF, then not for heaven's sake, but for secular sake, please join us. Work with us at FFRF.org. And speaking of election issues, Annie Laurie, you just wrote a blog called The Nuns Have It, spelled N-O-N-E, The Nuns Have It. And where can listeners read that blog?
Well, at FFRF.org, a news blog. And that asks, will political candidates ever catch up with the changing demographics and start to woo us, the nuns, the secular voters? And this blog points out, I point out in the blog, that a Pew study, as we've pointed out a lot of times on this show, found that nearly 20% of U.S. adults are non-religious, which is catapulting the nuns into the second largest, quote-unquote, denomination in the nation, second only to Roman Catholics. And the fact that the I'm secular and I vote crowd swayed the presidential election, and this has been very little commented on, but we helped three states adopt marriage equality, and exit polls found 70% of seculars went for Obama. That was the second highest after Hispanics. 12% of the electorate is non-religious. And so political candidates will ignore the secular vote in future at their peril. Although we're unheralded, unwanted, unwooed, the secular voters nevertheless made a huge mark in this election year. And I don't know if we have time to go into the Catholic Church's, the blog about the Catholic Church.
Yeah, you wrote a blog about it.
The New York Times a week ago had a very sad story, a appalling story about the government-run maternity hospital
In the Philippines.
In the Philippines, which had 17,700 babies born there last year. And the Catholic Church is fighting tooth and nail a bill to make contraception free and widely available. And
your blog points out that in the Philippines, the birth rate is nearly 25 out of 1,000 people annually, compared to 13.7 in the U.S.
So these priest-ridden countries, such as Guatemala, where women can't get contraception, sterilization, or abortion, the women are suffering hugely. There's so much unnecessary maternal mortality, babies dying, overpopulation, oppression of women. And I would urge listeners to go to our website, ffrf.org/news/blog, to view your photos, Dan, of the slums of Manila.
I saw some of the slums and thought the trash city there. So stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we are co-directors of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And just before the break, we were talking about my blog about the heavy hand of the Catholic Church in Manila in the Philippines, where they're fighting liberty, contraceptive liberty for women. And the blog, I'm encouraging you to go and look at Dan's pictures of the slums. Dan, how did you happen to get slum pictures from Manila?
Well, in Manila, the Philippines this year hosted the very first Philippine Atheist Conference. where a couple of free thought groups and atheists and agnostics from all over the country gathered together. And it was really an exciting time, and they were really, you know, geared up to work for state church separation. And the people there really want, the women really understand birth control, but it's the church that's fighting it. They've been protesting in front of the churches, and then on the Sunday we took a tour of the city, including some of the wealthy parts of town, but then some of the other parts of town over where the Manila dump is. And those are the photos that you'll see on your blog.
Where people live in the dump.
Well,
they make homes.
Well, they live there because they crawl up on the trash trucks to see if they can dig anything out of the trucks to make, to sell.
And this doesn't bother the Bishop of the Philippines if you read the New York Times article from a year ago. Now, we have a news segment from Eyewitness News Kentucky in Muhlenberg's, about the Muhlenberg schools, which is going to set up our interview in the third segment with Suzanne Lamb, and it's about our complaint about Gideons in the public schools.
The Muhlenberg County School District says it is now faced with a difficult task. Faith-based organizations frequently pass out Bibles and flyers, but now the Freedom From Religion Foundation says it should also have a turn. In tonight's top story, nonprofits are often allowed to visit schools in Muhlenberg County, but outraged parents say they do not want atheism anywhere near their kids, and we found out the group has already visited the county's high school.
Your friendly neighborhood atheist coming to a school near you. This is the blog of Suzanne Lamb, a Western Kentucky atheist visiting the schools in Muhlenberg County. She's already set up shop here at Muhlenberg County High, and the school board says it's her right.
We have a community use policy in our district where we allow nonprofit organizations to come in after hours. They can come one time to each school and distribute their literature.
Literature like Godless, how an evangelical preacher became one of America's leading atheists.
I think it's given them an opportunity to impose their views and their values where that they shouldn't have a right to do that.
Superintendent Dale Todd says non-faith-based groups must have the same opportunity as faith-based ones. He says the Gideon Society has been allowed to pass out Bibles in the past.
We just have to allow that same accommodation to those people who believe that way as do the faith-based groups.
No one, men or women, should be allowed in the schools to go in and to push their doctrine and their belief, which I believe to be a false belief, on any children.
For Gene Butler, he says the solution is to not allow any nonprofit organizations into schools after hours.
You're opening a door for anybody to go in, and that would be including the atheists.
This policy is one Todd says will definitely be revisited after the school year. But for now, this neighborhood atheist could be at an after-school function near you.
Eyewitness News' Tabney Dozier reporting from Muhlenberg County. A school board meeting is underway right now, and Tabney spoke with Suzanne Lamb, and she will be at that meeting. Nothing will likely happen to the policy this year, according to Lamb, since it's the middle of a school year. But the superintendent says those upset with the policy are letting their opinions be heard.
Well, it's kind of nice to know that my book, Godless, will be going up against the Gideon Bibles in some schools, at least in Kentucky.
And we are going to get the inside scoop coming up in the third segment of Free Thought Radio by talking with Suzanne Lamb, who's the mother, who's the activist who is taking on the school district for trying to get around the constitutional ban on distribution of Gideon Bibles in our public schools, something that we're always dealing with at FFRF, chasing those Gideons out.
Did you hear what that man on the street said? I don't think that the public schools should be pushing these doctrines that I disagree with. In other words, he thought it was okay, you know, to have the Bible, but if atheist groups are coming in, that should not be allowed in the public
schools. Well, he ought to get it, shouldn't he? You can't please everybody with that kind of distribution policy.
So if you see any issues in your school, if you see Gideon Bibles, in fact, I went by Whitewater, University of Whitewater, to drop off our daughter a few weeks ago, and there they were in big black suits, these older guys, a bunch of men, handing out these Bibles to students, and they do it to fifth graders in a lot of schools. If you see it in your community, complain or let us know about it.
We can't do anything about it when it's on city sidewalks, but when it's on school property, public school property, we can.
So stay tuned. There's going to be more Free Thought Radio.
We'll talk with Suzanne Lamb specifically about this Kentucky violation.
And we're going to talk with Rebecca, too, later.
Rebecca Markert, our senior staff attorney, will come on at the very end to talk about a lot of her victories about getting rid of religion in the schools.
And this is a little bit of the Freethought Band out of Minnesota playing some of their music. So stay tuned. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gillow.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and on the phone with us from Kentucky is an FFRF member named Suzanne Lamb, who is a secular homeschooling parent. She's a former Catholic, she tells us. She is author of What to Tell the Neighbors, a blog about unschooling, as she calls it, and living as an atheist in the Bible Belt. She's published several pieces of short fiction and creative nonfiction, and she lives with her husband Steve and their three children in Muhlenberg County, Kentucky, where FFRF had gotten involved to stop the illegal distribution of Gideon Bibles to fifth graders. And then after our complaint, and we had a legal victory, the school district got busy and passed a policy that is meant to get around the Gideons, and that's where Suzanne stepped in. So I think I'm going to let her tell the story. So welcome to our program, Suzanne.
Thank you so much.
So tell us what happened after we stopped the Gideons. We didn't completely stop them, did we?
No. I was aware from the local newspaper of FFRF's involvement in getting the Gideons out of the classrooms initially in the fall, last fall. And I thought that was the end of the story. I think a lot of us felt that, you know, this was long overdue and expected that that would be the end of it. And I just happened to be online, curious about some other recent activity that I understood the school board had taken. And I came across the minutes from the board's May board meeting and noticed this curious line item that just jumped out at me. That stated that the board had passed a unanimous motion to cooperate and support the Gideon organization. And I couldn't really imagine what that might mean, but it seemed very strange for me that a school board that had recently been in hot water for allowing this illegal distribution would be publicly, you know, taking this kind of a policy stand that they were going to be supporting the Gideons. So at that point, honestly, I thought about it for a few weeks because I sensed that this was something much larger, and I really had to think about how willing I was to get involved with it. But after a few weeks, I felt that no one else was going to address this. The media had not probed this at all, and I made a phone call to a school board member and simply asked what this strange policy meant. And I was told that it meant basically that they were opening the doors to anyone who wanted to distribute literature, but that it would no longer be done during instructional time.
Anyone or any organization, any nonprofit?
Well, they told me that this line item on the meeting minutes that stated they were going to endorse and support the Gideons, what it actually meant, they told me, was that they were opening the door to anyone.
Gee,
I thought that was very strange because nothing in the meeting minutes reflected that. So, you know, it was a little bit suspicious.
Well, I think they realized, uh-oh, when you called them, huh?
And right. I think there was a big uh-oh, and there was some stammering and some hesitance. But I did feel that there had been kind of a script prepared in case this, you know, did happen. And so they assured me that now the doors were open, that any nonprofit group would be permitted to distribute materials at open houses, reading nights, various kinds of after-school events. But I could not get any sense about exactly what those events were, what the policy was, what the procedures were. It was very vague. And then I followed up with an email to the superintendent asking for additional clarification and basically got the same kind of vague answer. So I was very dissatisfied with this, and that led to me writing a very long, detailed letter to the board. It via the superintendent, outlining all the legal problems that I saw with this policy and urging them at the very least to put this policy in writing so that local citizens could judge it on its own merits, because it was very murky and unclear, and they refused to do that. It was a policy, but it wasn't really a policy because it wasn't in writing. No one had access to the details of it. So it was very suspicious. And to me, it seemed very, very much about keeping anyone from knowing that such a policy existed, although I deeply sensed that the Gideons had already received a personal invitation to take advantage of it. So that's how this got started.
So it got started, and eventually you ended up tabling at the Muhlenberg High School's parent night to distribute free thought literature, literature from FFRF and the Secular Student Alliance. So when did that take place?
Well, that just happened, I'm guessing that was about three weeks ago, perhaps. And that happened because it seemed to me that the only logical place to take this action was to really push the board to see if this policy was serious. And honestly, when I submitted requests to every principal in our school district to distribute literature, I expected that at that point there would be some kind of a breakdown. But what happened was I very quickly got a response from every principal that was almost a cookie-cutter, identical response, saying that I could come. And so I felt that at that point the principals had already been advised that they needed to say yes. And so I had, by this point, made contact with some members of the Secular Student Alliance at Western Kentucky University, and they had long been interested in taking on this project because many of them attended high school in Muhlenberg County. So they felt that this was a great way to give back to their native community. And so we went to the high school. We set up a table. We were told that we needed to sit behind the table and not approach anyone directly, which is what we were most comfortable doing anyway. Certainly, we weren't interested in trying to force our literature on anyone. And we had about two dozen parents and students stop by our table. Several expressed gratitude that we were there. Several took literature. We also had some Christians who just were really interested in finding out more about what our groups were about. It was generally a very positive experience, in contrast to the reaction that I received privately through my blog, email, phone calls, et cetera, which
before
was
and
quite,
after.
Quite the opposite.
Well, you made the evening news.
Yes, yes.
So, but now the point of your doing this is not only to test it, but in your blog, you wrote about how you don't think that, I mean, especially at the lower levels, that atheist and agnostic groups should really be in the schools either. You'd like to see...
Right. We are not. And the Secular Student Alliance, and I feel very much the same way about it. Of course, they table all the time on their university campus.
Which is different.
We were just there, and we deliberately took the offer that we were given to go to the high school first because we felt most comfortable with that. But our intention was never to... deconvert anyone or to get a hold of people's children when they separate them from their parents and all these things that we've been accused of, which are really just ridiculous because, at least on my blog, I've been very clear in every single post that has addressed this topic that what our preferred action is that the board will end its practice of allowing nonprofit groups to come. It's so problematic in so many different ways.
Now, are any of these functions... Are children, I mean, parents' night, I'm assuming there's only parents there, maybe with toddlers. But are any of these functions actually going to have students at them where they're going to allow handouts?
Well, the policy is really kind of murky. So it's not even clear that the principals know what kinds of events qualify for this because they've not been they have not received written clarification as to the guidelines. So we had one school mentioned initially that we might want to attend a football game, and that was kind of out there. But most of the principals have come back to us and suggested things like reading nights, parent nights, which are events where students will be in attendance with their parents.
Well,
they would not be attending alone.
I'm sure that the Gideons are going to be there, so it probably is a good thing if secular groups show up, and maybe that will stop the policy, huh?
Well, that's our hope. And then the other aim that we have is to provide some support for secular students, because one of the most wonderful outcomes of this has been the number of emails I have received from former Muhlenberg County students who really had a difficult time during especially their high school years, because they felt that there was such a climate of intolerance toward secular students. And several of these emails also obviously list some pretty blatant violations of law that they personally experienced. But they felt that it was good for us to be there as long as the Gideons and religious groups were allowed access, just because it says to secular students, hey, you're not alone, you are represented. And maybe our hope is that if they don't immediately revoke the policy, that at least we are sending a message that there is a place for secular Americans in our society and here in Muhlenberg County.
Well, we know that Patrick Elliott, our staff attorney, is on this and is going to also write a letter to the Muhlenberg School District frowning on this policy. I mean, we feel like we stop something and then, you know, when we're not looking, they come right back, the Gideons. But we're really glad you're there as a state church watchdog in Kentucky.
And your blog
thank you very much.
Your blog is called What to Tell the Neighbors. Thank you, Suzanne.
Yes, thank you, Suzanne.
Thank you so much.
We'll be back to talk with our senior staff attorney, Rebecca Markert, about more school violations that she is stopping. Prayer at school board meetings. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie, and we are going to talk about another violation of religion in the schools that FFRF has stopped, this time in Pennsylvania, and we have a news clip, CBS 21 News, Lancaster County.
The Eastern Lancaster County School District was the only school district left in this county that would still pray before school board meetings, but it has decided to cancel that tradition instead of spending taxpayer dollars to fight for it in court.
I think initially the will of the board would have been to challenge it. However, the solicitor made it pretty clear that we would lose.
For the past 15 years, the school board for the Eastern Lancaster County Schools would say a short prayer before its monthly meetings. The board thought it was okay because the prayer happened before the meetings officially began. But that was not the case. A few months ago, after being tipped off by a local resident, the Freedom From Religion Foundation sent the board a letter demanding they stop praying. The nonprofit, based out of Madison, Wisconsin, cited a recent court decision which said prayer at school board meetings is unconstitutional. In the original letter sent to the school, Freedom From Religion wrote, quote, "Prayer at public school board meetings is unnecessary, inappropriate, and divisive. Calling upon board members as well as parents and students of the school to pray is coercive, embarrassing, and beyond the scope of our secular school system."
Rather than take money, take funds that are critical to educating kids, particularly in this economy, and also give that money to the coffers of these kinds of organizations, the board made a logical an intelligent decision, I think, to back off of their position.
So now, instead of prayer, the school board will begin each meeting with a moment of silence. Live in the Lancaster County Mobile Newsroom in East Hempfield Township, Chris Pabst, CBS 21 News.
And now we have on the phone with us the attorney, the woman who wrote that letter they were talking about in that story, FFRF's senior staff attorney, Rebecca Markert. Her letter stopped this violation and several other violations recently in Pennsylvania. So congratulations, Rebecca.
Thank you.
Now, how many school board violations have you stopped recently in the state of Pennsylvania?
Recently this year, we've stopped 5 school board prayer violations. We did stop another school board prayer violation in 2011.
In Pennsylvania?
In Pennsylvania as well.
Now, tell us about the court precedent that, it seems like there's a lot of violations going on in Pennsylvania, but there's also a very good precedent against it.
Sure. In 2011, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, which encompasses Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware, ruled on a case, Doe v. Indian River School District, that found that prayer before school board meetings are akin to
prayer at any school-sponsored activity, and therefore it's unconstitutional, and school board meetings cannot have prayer. In light of that decision, we were alerted to several school boards that were continuing to pray, some instances of reciting the Lord's Prayer before school board meetings, and we wrote to those school districts and alerted them to the recent decision that's binding on their jurisdictions, and they agreed to stop.
Well, they don't have much choice, and so you're doing a lot of good mopping up there in Pennsylvania, and you know, this is not one of our most typical complaints that we get in public schools. It's, I think, rather uncommon for school boards to be praying. Is that your impression?
Yes, I think, you know, in districts like the Third Circuit and the Sixth Circuit, where we do have precedent, we tend to get more complaints there because they know that there's law against it. But we don't seem to get other school boards in other areas of the country.
And, of course, students, sometimes there's a student member. Students have a right and often a need to go before their school board. So when they're praying, they're creating this idea that religion has something to do with public education there.
Right, right. And the courts, in these cases that have struck down prayer before school board meetings, have brought up the integral role that school boards play in the public school context, particularly with dealing with students, directing policy, discipline, that sort of thing, and have used that as a reason why it's unconstitutional.
It's interesting that in a lot of these news stories, the school board doesn't say that they agree with us on the constitutional principle usually, but that we're going to lose money, it's going to be too expensive, and besides, there's a legal court decision telling us that we can't do this.
Right. There was one school district, Greencastle Antrim, when we sent the letter, they originally said, yes, we're going to stop, but then there was community outcry over it, and they said, yes, we have heard you, we're going to fight this. A month later at their next meeting, they said, we discussed it with legal counsel and we're not going to move forward.
Cooler heads prevailed.
Right.
Did you notice in that story that the president of the school board was saying, we don't want to be giving money into the coffers of organizations like this, as if we were suing in order to fatten our bank account?
Right.
We never make any money on lawsuits, even winning lawsuits. We always lose money. There's quite a myth. I think it's maybe because religious right groups seem to rake in a lot of money when they publicize our cases. They get money, but we don't.
But there was a bit of an insult in that statement, you know, groups like this getting our money.
Now, what do you have some other current school issues that you're dealing with, Rebecca?
I've actually been sort of inundated with election abuses.
That's right.
So that's what my focus has been the last couple of weeks. Dealing with churches and other religious organizations that have endorsed or opposed candidates. The majority that we've seen have been opposing President Barack Obama and endorsing Mitt Romney. And then also polling place abuses, where people are upset that they have to vote in a church, but churches that are used as polling locations but put up posters. There is one case that I was working on actually this week where right before you went into the room to vote, a picture of the Billy Graham ad was posted on the door.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it said, Vote Biblical Values November 6th.
Do you remember where that was?
That was...
I'm putting you on the spot here.
We get right, so many I don't have it on my desk right now,
yeah.
But...
We get so many complaints. Really, they all blur together after a while, don't they?
I think that one was actually in Illinois, if I recall correctly. There were two that I was working on. One actually in Wisconsin that happened in Milwaukee, where a church was used as a polling location, and they had a table out with lots of literature that they were encouraging the voters to take. Among the literature was a free copy of the Bible.
Well, we also had a complaint here in Madison, Wisconsin, that I don't think has been written up yet, but a similar violation. And
yes.
In Madison, the city council many years ago went on record preferring secular polling places, and our state statute is on record preferring secular places to religious public buildings, actually, are to be preferred. So, but it's often a quarter or more, sometimes half of all polling places have become churches, and there are not neutral places to vote.
So this is not just constitutional issues, it's also election law.
Right.
The regulations about what to do at a polling place.
Right.
Did you have something to do with that? I think it was the marquee in Texas where the pastor put up, vote for the Mormon, not the Muslim.
Yes. I drafted the letter to the IRS about that one, too. That was in Leakey, Texas.
Yeah, well, that was pretty flagrant. And I understand that some of these pastors are doing this because they want to take a lawsuit.
Yes. Yes, that is actually the point of this Pulpit Freedom Sunday, where it's a movement by the Alliance Defending Freedom, or ADF, where they want the IRS to come after them so that they can sue and say that this abridges their free speech rights.
Well, we have a new lawsuit on that issue, so we'll see what happens. Well, thank you very much for joining us and for your victories, Rebecca.
Thank you.
We also want to thank our engineer today, Ben Yant, and our announcer, Buzz Kemper. This show is recorded in Madison, Wisconsin. You can get the podcast or archives at ffrf.org/radio.
Join us or ask for more information at ffrf.org, or you can phone 1-800-335-4021. And if you join us, you support our broadcasts and our podcasts and our litigation, and you get 10 issues a year of our newspaper, Free Thought Today. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday.